Hey guys, I'm here to tell you about Space Rehearsal and Recording. A uniquely Austin experience, preserving its musical heritage and inspiring future artists, Space is an affordable venue for rehearsal and recording situated just a few short miles from downtown Austin. With 31 spacious rooms, wide gallery-lit corridors, and excellent parking, they have the space to help you with your creative endeavors. Join their customers that range from local and international musicians, acting troupes, yoga practitioners, performance artists, and yes, people, me. Skyrocket has a room there. We rehearse there. We all rehearse our personal creative endeavor things in there. And look, man, they got art there. It's a total, like, creative little community, okay? There's art that people, they change out the art every once in a while, features some artist. They have posters of all the bands framed and records framed. And there's always great music playing when you walk in there. Friendly staff, people ready to get going. It's clean. It smells good. There's rooms with windows. I can't stress to you how great that is. And great people hanging out there. I get to have chats with Alejandro Escobedo in the hallway quite often. And that's pretty fun. Okay? So look, go to spaceatx.com or call 512-448-9518. Don't forget, tell them you heard about it on How Did I Get Here and get a free hour. They'll give you a free hour for that. Space Rehearsal and Recording in Austin, Texas. Now, let's get to the show. Ooh, did I say that? I mean, let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. I have the very first makeup show of someone's interview that I deleted before I got to put it out. So, about a year and a half ago, I sat down with comedian John Toll, and we had a long conversation. It was fantastic, and then I accidentally deleted it. So, over the last year and a half, we've hung out, we've been on different podcasts together, I've gone to see him do comedy a lot, I've seen him quite a lot because he's one of my very favorite comics. That's the truth. He makes me laugh from the bottom of my belly. And he's real, he's smart, and he's subversive. And that's what I like about him. Okay, he's always on tour. You can find out where he is all the time by going to johntoll.com. And he's also got 4256 Productions, where he has a host of podcasts. You can hear his point of view, his humor on Disrupt the Illusion, After the Illusion, Carpe Path Diem, and Take It Under Advisement. So anyway, my makeup conversation with John Toll is fantastic. And we spend a lot of time talking about the band Kiss, because we had this conversation before Kiss was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Okay, they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and as you know, I was listening to the audiobook. Paul Stanley's autobiography just came out, and on audiobook, he reads it. So I listened to him tell me his perspective on Kiss, and it changed my whole view on Kiss. I read the Ace book, and I've always been an Ace guy. You know, I picked up a great copy of Kiss Alive on vinyl this weekend, and looking at it, thinking to myself, it's Ace. What I was attracted to about Ace is, like, everyone is cognizant of the camera. Peter Criss isn't even playing drums. He's got his hands up. If you look at the cover of this album, this is what you're seeing. Gene's doing this weird scratching himself and bleeding. Paul Stanley's doing the kissy face to the camera. And Ace is kind of just in the middle, just in some weird pose in the middle of something, which I found more interesting than the other guys. What's this guy doing? Why does he retreat into his own world? That's what I was into in Ace. Okay, well, come to find out, Ace wasn't as cool as a person. He just looked like that. And, you know, through the course of the story, it makes a lot of sense about Ace and Peter. And I've always defended Ace and Peter. But I've never really liked Gene. And, you know, the more you got to know Gene through his personality in the 90s and in the 2000s through his reality show, I saw him on the Apprentice, you start to think he's kind of a self-absorbed asshole. And that's what you get from the Paul Stanley book. He's like, hey, look, you know, this guy and I, we do some great shit together, but man, whoa, that guy's, you know, he's into himself. He's out for himself. And that's what you get from him. And for some reason, I always saw Ace and Peter as victims of those two guys, but really they weren't. Ace and Peter were victims of themselves, you know? And what they did was they ended up alienating fans. And Kiss, you know, is known for their fans. I mean, they've, you know, their fans. I'm still a fan. I've been a fan since Johnny Padgett handed me the Kiss Alive album in like 1975 or 76 when I was a kid, and I looked at it and I saw Ace in that weird pose and I said, this is my fucking, I haven't even heard this, and this is my fucking band, okay? And I've been committed to them. I went to see them in the 90s. I love them. I still listen to their album. All this bumper music is Kiss music today because I love Kiss and I am a fan, and their fans get married in Kiss makeup. Their fans get buried in Kiss caskets. Their fans get tattoos. They join an army. My guest today both is a Kiss Army member and has a Kiss Army tattoo on his arm. John Toll. He's a huge Kiss fan. Anyway, we'll talk to John Toll in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. And that's my Kiss thing, okay? So what I ended up getting from Paul was that really he was committed to the band. He was committed to the vision. He saw Kiss as something greater than himself to the point where he believes that Kiss will go on even without him and Gene. Keep on going on. People in costumes. And those costumes and those characters mean more than the people themselves to the masses. I think that's interesting. There's no band like that. There's the Beatles didn't think that. The Rolling Stones obviously don't think that. They're 953 years old. They're up there in walkers playing. Anyway. So that's my view on Kiss. The Paul Stanley book is great. It was great to hear him tell his story. I'm not a fan of his analogies constantly. But anyway, I am a fan of his, and I have a great deal of respect for him that I did not have before. That's my experience with the Paul Stanley book. Get it. It's an interesting story. He is an interesting guy, and I love Kiss. I hope that you guys had a great weekend. I did. I played in Pflugerville on Friday with Skyrocket, and we had a great show. Saturday, I got up and went and met with my friend A&R Peterson about our new podcast. Does anyone remember Laughter? Does anybody remember Laughter? Sorry, I can't even remember the name of it. Looks like it might launch in about June, okay? We're going to have some shows. We're going to be talking about movies. Me, Ashley Bergeron Ford, and A&R Peterson. Fantastic. And then we'll also have a guest. So look for that coming up. Then after I met with A&R on Saturday, I went and celebrated Record Store Day with some friends, my friends Faye and Lydia, Daniel and Tara. We went record shopping. I picked up the Ume album on vinyl. I picked up the Black album by Jay-Z on vinyl, and I got Kiss Alive, but before Record Store Day. But I count it as a Record Store Day purchase because I love Kiss. All right, and I hope you had a great Easter, a great 420. Is today Earth Day, or was it like Sunday 420 was like Weed Day, Earth Day, and Easter? That's a lot of stuff to pack into one day. But you might as well. That's what you got to do. All right. Look, I'm going to stop talking now. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys had a great weekend. I hope you enjoy my conversation with this brilliant comic and this brilliant mind and my very dear friend, the amazing John Toll. Let's get down. Playing gigs and yeah, so I've got all my rigs all sprawled out all over the living room.
That's what happens when you spend your life being creative. My whole thing is I cannot work in a if my own personal space is not completely feng shuied.
Yeah,
with the energy being able to flow in it.
Yeah,
and that's weird. Like, I'm, you know what I mean? Like, and mind you, I know nothing about feng shui. Like, what?
Right, dude, right.
Yeah, this guy was like, yo, this place is pretty good for feng shui. And I was like, yeah, you know about this? He's like, yeah, of course. And I was like, yeah, of course you do. And he's like, well, the only thing problem is that under your bed is a lot of clutter. So if you clean that out, then the energy is really going to be going through. And then make sure you put drain covers in the toilet. Not to keep the toilet closed.
Yeah.
Block the drain in the shower.
Yeah.
Block the drain in both sinks, because that's going to stop money from going out of your house.
Yeah.
This dude said this sober, and I wasn't when I heard it, so it made a lot of sense to me. So I cleaned out underneath my bed. All my drains are plugged up, and it's an absolute creative space. But mind you, that's just me.
I don't understand feng shui. I was married, and my ex-wife's like read a book, took a class, had a friend that sure. was like her feng shui guru, and like then we had a door red, and our bed was facing the wrong way to make a living.
Oh,
you know what I mean? I couldn't figure out any of that shit.
See, that's now. Here's the question: you either would take the time and the energy, and you would care enough about feng shui in your living space to go, yeah, this is obviously something I need to get into,
right?
You know what I mean? You, as musicians, we spend money on gear because it sure. makes sense, because the gear that we have and all the money that we put into our business comes out of the end. But like our living space, now we'll just leave it up to somebody else who kind of paid attention when they were paying attention,
right?
But
how was Wichita?
Wichita was
canceled.
Oh, you
didn't go.
No.
It was canceled,
yeah,
sorry.
They're opening up a brand new room there in Wichita, and I think they ran into some building problems. You know, anytime you have a build out, it's going to take forever.
Yeah. So. You're on the road a lot.
Too much. To be honest.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, it's not really. I mean, my whole thing is, as long as you can have your day feel and look like your day is supposed to look like, then that's fine. My issue with being on the road is it's not every single day is that cookie cutter day that I have here when I live in Austin.
Right.
And so it's that kind of, well, now I'm outside of the box. Now I have to scramble to find something to do at night or a place to crash or whatever.
Right.
That's that kind of unknown fear, that future fear that you put off in the distance of what touring could be.
Yeah.
So now it's sitting here now mitigating that and trying to fill up my day so I don't freak out when I'm on the road.
Yeah. It's like it's the same thing with touring with these, but you're traveling alone. You're not right. in a band.
Yeah, but you got to think about it. Like even when you're on the road, depending on, I mean, how many conversations are really, you've been on that 15-hour overnight drive where, you know, for the most part, you're just listening to music and no one's talking to each other. You know what I mean? Or you're playing the band game where everyone has to come up with a band name that comes off one of the letters.
All
of the
different
thing.
Things. Yeah,
all
yeah,
the
yeah.
things you
yeah,
do
yeah,
to pass
yeah,
the time yeah, in yeah. the van is the only time you really interact. So literally I go on the road by myself and I turn off the radio. It's just silence. It's just in the car and
wow.
silence. Yeah. And that's it. Because it's the same thing. It's my car environment being silent and being clean. Like when I tour, like everything's clean and it's silent. It's the same thing as my home environment where everything is tidied up and picked up and in the right place.
Right.
Because I have to be in the right environment to be able to create.
Did you go to Montessori school?
I did not. I did not.
Montessori.
Is that really? Because yeah. I just learned about 6 months ago what Montessori was. Because there was one by the apartment where live. And I kept walking by the sign going, what is that?
Yeah. My mom
Why
became
is that?
A teacher and my aunt is a teacher. So
nice.
I went, and you learn how to push in your chair, you learn how to pour, you learn practical life skills.
Really?
That's what they're called. Yeah.
Now, is that something I can do in my 40s now? Can I go back and get a continuing adult Montessori education? Or is it like feng shui? I've already learned all there is to learn, so there's no reason to go back and have it.
I'm going to call my aunt after this and see if we can, and we can make a short film out of it, like John going in with the four-year-olds.
I love it.
To like learn how to pour and carry
Jeez.
A tray.
Learning how to share, learning how to get along.
So I love watching you perform. You have such a great, I was thinking about it today and I was listening to your Carpath Diem episode 12.
Oh, awesome.
And I want to talk to you about that too, because I think I saw Gwar on the same tour that you did.
Nice. Oh, in 89.
89. I'm
Very
pretty sure
cool.
it was 89. When you perform comedy.
All right.
There's an ease, there's an intensity to what you're doing, but there's an ease to how it's coming to you and it's coming out. And I was thinking about one of the things about you, I think, that sets you apart from other people in shows that I've seen you in, is that you talk to the audience. You don't just say shit at them.
Right. Yeah. But that's,
you know what I mean? Then there's an ease to how you're doing it. And does that come from being on the road so much and just doing it so much that like,
well, what I mean, you know, in any level of performance, you're looking to engage. I'm looking to have the audience like get that engagement with the people that I'm speaking to.
Yeah.
And then turn it into not I'm coming to as a musician, I always I always fed on the interaction of the crowd
right.
with the band. And what the band did, now the band had two choices. The band had said, okay, the crowd is giving us this. We're going to respond in kind with a song or an energy that's either going to bring them up
yeah.
to another level or bring them down if you need to say something.
Yeah.
And so I learned just from being a musician and kind of keying on the artists that I really loved growing up. You know what I mean? Hardcore bands who had really strong front men.
Yeah.
You know, like Rabies from Warzone, Roger Moret for Agnostic Front, Freddie right. Madball. Guys, when they got on stage, they had something to say.
Yeah.
And that always meant something to, like, growing up listening. But at the same thing, as far as somebody having something to say, Paul Stanley. He's a guy that could actually lead an arena in a huge way.
Yeah.
So that's and so now I'm coming from comedy from that perspective of, look, it's not just one guy up here just yelling,
right.
but it's an interaction.
Yeah.
And it's giving the crowd something, seeing how they react to it.
Yeah.
And then reacting back to that. And just really all you're doing is just connecting energy. The energy that's in the room.
You do that. Yeah.
Well, because I mean, you think you have to. I think because yeah. it's not, because that just feels good to me as a person who loves to do this.
Right.
Like I want to have that connection.
Yeah.
So you go into these situations where if the audience is not in a receptive place, then you work to get them to be receptive and then move on from there.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it's so big when you walk into it, you're like, well, then this is just going to be, this is all amps on 11. And this is going to be 60 minutes of who knows what's going to happen. But guess what? They're already into it. And if you're into it, and then at that point, there's no script. You're just going. Whatever comes into your brain, whatever hits here, like in your heart center, just yeah. goes straight out. And it's so true. It rings so true. Then they respond in that thing.
That's what I get. I don't get like material from you as much as, I mean, I'm sure it's there. But
the material,
your ability to convey it.
Sure.
Is so conversational.
Right. But that goes from the difference of, you know, I used to write things out. I used to write things out like in huge, long form, you know, and have it all detailed out. And then I just kind of got to the idea where, oh, I have the idea of what I want to say. It's never going to be the same thing. Because in that moment, when I'm standing there, I'm not the same moment that I was when I wrote it. I'm not that same person. If I'm delivering an idea or a vibe that I wrote when I didn't believe it then,
yeah.
it's not going to ring true. And so I think that I go in with certain ideas and topics of what I'd like to talk about,
yeah.
and then engage the audience to see, well, what like experience are we having currently? Yeah. Like, am I talking to a guy who's my same age? Am I talking to a kid who's 21?
Yeah.
You know, when I'm engaging with somebody, I'm literally just talking to myself because I've been everybody that I've talked to. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
that totally and so does. It's that kind of vibe buy-in that really keeps me going. So, as far as creating, whether I'm sitting down and writing everything note for note, or I'm sitting in a car and I'm yeah. just thinking
yeah.
for 8 hours before I go to a gig, it's the same thing. It's just creating.
Yeah, isn't it maddening though that I would get. My friend Bill used to call it van sanity, where you just start going nuts from being in a van.
How many days does it take to kick back in on that?
My thing is 3 weeks.
21 days.
Yeah.
Three weekends.
I have one day, I have a breakdown. This is honest to God. Every time except for one tour.
Okay.
Except for one tour. I had a breakdown and then I'm like, I quit. It only lasts like 45 minutes.
Sure.
But I'm done.
How free did you feel when you would quit after being so frustrated?
Amazing. But the thing is it's always when you're real far away and you have that like ground control to Major Tom feeling like, sure. oh shit, I'm never coming back. I'm floating away. You know what I mean? I'm never going to be home again. And so then I feel better. But as soon as I come back from that, I am insane.
Wow.
Bad decisions, craziness, constant laughing at everything.
What is it about your personal energy that you get to such a stressed out, because you're on the road, you are absolutely living your existence to its fullest as a musician. Our goal is to get yeah. out there and perform,
yeah.
and you get to that point and it's so frustrating that you have this break, you quit, and this feeling, this euphoria of possibility washes back over you,
right.
and you go, well, let's start this over again and go back on this.
Yeah, and just not ride the wave of craziness.
That's
instead
all it
of
is.
Trying to fight it. That's what it is. Well, okay. I get surrender to it. I'm like, I'm on the road.
Think
Everything's
about this.
Just weird.
Think about this. How many people are having this exact same conversation with themselves that you and I are having right now? And they're going, what do I do with this crazy wave of artistry?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not an artist. I'm just crazy. I need a medication. I need a program to be in.
Right.
I need somebody to come take care of me. I'm a victim of my own idea.
All you need is an outlet.
That's it. And sometimes the outlet is to just stop looking at who you are as something that's wrong with what's going on.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, if unfortunately our society is so built into people amassing into just collections of ideas, collections of beliefs that just keep them away from each other,
yeah,
that it just becomes a divisionary thing and people look at themselves and go, I don't fit 100% into this, or it doesn't ring true for me. And then they go, you're crazy.
Yeah.
It's sad in a way, because if they just had a different, if someone at a certain point of their upbringing pulled them aside and said, everything that you're doing right now is absolutely vital and it's perfect and you're amazing at it because you can only be you. So stop trying to be everything else.
Right.
Just be you. If someone would have pulled them aside, you wouldn't need all these, you wouldn't need people on, psychotropic medications or things to keep them in line or dumb them down so they can go and work through meaningless tasks. I worked in corporate America and I had to sit in a cubicle with a headset on. I couldn't do it.
What did you do? Calls?
I was collecting on mortgages, dude. Talking to people who were in bankruptcy, talking to people who had, you know, used money poorly, had gotten themselves into situations where they didn't understand the contracts that they were signing. And they found themselves in a situation where there's no forgiveness. You should have read that fine print. We made the fine print on purpose, but you should have known. The guy selling you the bill of goods who said, yeah, lie about your income, lie about your expenses. What if you just cut back on this and this and this and this and this? The next thing you know, they're losing their house. I'm on the other end of that phone call having to stay focused because I want to make money. I don't want to help anybody. I need to get a deal here, and it's getting that deal that keeps my lifestyle going, which is I have to pay for where I live, and I have to pay for my cars, and I have to take care of all the things that I'm taking care of. And I got to this break point when I had to take medication to stay focused on making money while being one half of a conversation that was ruining somebody's life, even though they had gotten there to their own free will. There was no help to be had, and I was not in a situation where I could help them. When I left that position and I said, look, there has to be a better way to help these people. Give me a job where I can go and do that. I went and found the gig, all right? And I'm not going to say who I work for, but it was presented of this is helping and this is going to be this and everybody's going to be taken care of and we're facilitating borrowers and we're going to make sure that the plan is working well for them. And it was the same scam. It's just the idea that you're helping.
Right.
That's the suck part.
Yeah.
And so I said, looked around. I go, are you kidding me? You're paying money to take medications to change the way that you interact so you can live this money-driven lifestyle?
That's gross.
And I just I had to unplug from it. I said, this is a reality. Oh, yeah. Because guess what? I still was having fun. I still had a bunch of friends. I was still playing golf. I was still in music and I was still vibing and all this thing. But I had this huge negative deficit in my life and I had to undo it. And that's where that came from. And I said, what do we know about time? Time's an illusion. Time is money. Money is the same illusion. Money is just an idea of how you look at it. And I said, I have to change my identity. Not my identity. I have to change my interaction with this illusion of money.
Right.
And took my lifestyle from this six-figure lifestyle to be able to live like a seven-figure lifestyle.
Right.
On very, very little.
Yeah.
It just changing the idea.
Yeah.
And changing what my workspace when I was driving for money was a cubicle. And now it's a car. Now it's a hotel room. Now it's a tour bus. Now it's an apartment. Now it's a house. It's wherever you find yourself.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I had to have, nobody had that conversation with me that we wish we could have with everyone else.
Yeah.
You just had to figure out and go, look around and go, oh, this doesn't feel right.
Right.
This absolutely is wrong.
Yeah.
And so, and then a lot of people get to that point and they go, I've screwed this up so bad, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah, there are people that do
and
that.
And some people get to that point and they just say, well, fuck it, this is my path. And the gas is on 140 miles an hour till oblivion. when you kill yourself through every other means of way you can kill yourself without really killing yourself.
Right.
Whether it's a bad diet, yeah. you know what I mean? Whether if it's just, you know, ingesting a ton of negativity or bad ideas.
Yeah.
Surrounding yourself with people who can feed that fear beast inside of you, and you all collectively go out and just create chaos together. And that's a choice.
Yeah.
And that's just as valid as a monk.
Yeah.
Think about that.
It's true. It's like it's just people making a living, living a life.
Right, exactly. But you have to make sure that as you sit in the middle of your own experience, take a deep breath and look around and say, does this feel right? Does this look right?
Right.
You know? And then you're going to get to the point where you no longer ask the question.
So, as a Kiss fan, you're fed no. You fell in love with something musically and an idea that people had, but then this thing turned into a very ugly sort of corporate animal, right?
I think that's our responsibility as people who love Kiss and consume Kiss and I have a logo tattooed on my body. Where if I want to take a real cynical path about the path of this band, sure, I can do that. And I can feed an ego, or I feed a conversation line that doesn't need to happen. Or I can look at it and go, you know what? It didn't matter who was on that stage, because as long as the idea of Kiss, when I first discovered Kiss,
right.
That's the thing. So I can still go see Kiss and still get that feeling in my chest and go, oh, whoa. You know what I mean?
Right.
But you just heard the Who play. So you know the banner's going up.
Yeah.
You know the lights are going to go down.
Yeah.
You know the announcer's going to come. He's going to yell about your city. Yeah. And everyone's going to get excited.
Yeah.
And the crowd's going to hit a crescendo.
Yeah.
That curtain's going to drop and they're going to bring it.
Yeah.
Kiss is going to bring it. And it doesn't matter who's on that stage.
But you don't see a parallel between yourself in a cubicle and then Ace self-medicating towards the end.
Absolutely.
When they were doing that. Yeah.
And so, I mean, God, it was so strange because I was thinking about this on the drive over here. And it was being in Kiss. And what are we looking at? 4 years?
Yeah, 40 years.
Yeah,
40 years, for sure.
40 year, yeah. I believe this is the 40 year.
That's the last year, yeah.
That's 40 years. That's 40 years of keeping mentally strong, staying current with the culture, 40 years of working out, 40 years of being a good person that gives back to other people, 40 years of we're putting our blood, sweat, and soul into this. And along the journey, you find that people have in their own beings different lives that they want to lead. And you know that played out is going to end up hurting your business.
Right.
And I think that in that sense, those guys, you know, Peter, Ace and Peter, they just got to the point where they wanted to be something else that Kiss didn't allow them to be, and they hoped that Kiss would change as they changed, and right. It didn't. And that's why I think they ultimately worked themselves out of a job.
Yeah.
That's my gut feeling.
Well, I can also see that at some point you're at the Grammy Awards and fucking Paul Simon's back there and like George Harrison is back there and you're a dude dressed in some weird outfit and you want to go up and talk shop, and I'm sure those guys were like, hey, look, dude, just go over there.
Well, you know, but look at a beautiful parallel to that is the beginning of Private Parts. Where Howard's dressed as Fart Man,
and he's about
to drop on, I think it was the MTV Music Awards.
I watched that happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really? You watched it?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's the first time I ever heard of him.
Really?
And I thought it was hysterical.
Could you imagine what a huge event that would be then when that was going on? You're going to be at this character.
It was
that
a
you
huge
built.
Event. I mean, it was like it was a.
It was hysterical.
My girlfriend and I got into an argument about it. She thought it was the stupidest thing, and I couldn't stop laughing.
Right. Yeah. Well, isn't that how people just, that's her experience. Her experience is to have that, and your experience is to have your experience. You know what I mean? And so
Yeah.
But the fact that he's lowered, he's in this costume, and then he's now still dressed in the costume. He's got to go through people people who are peers,
yeah,
people
all
who are
like
lower
snickering
than he is.
At him. Yeah.
Yeah, people who are nobodies. Even just think about that. He had to walk by people who literally, you know, he was so bigger than, and they're looking at him like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, you just made a mockery.
But I can guarantee there were other people in that room who are absolutely 100% believed in what they had just seen was absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And were more than stoked and say, I can't believe I witnessed this.
Yeah.
And that's a cool thing. That's that same feeling connection that I have with everything that I ingest.
Right.
You know?
I've always had a hard time with how rock and roll people take themselves so seriously about what they do. Yeah, I've never, that's why I liked that, because it really like, hey, here's someone that doesn't give a fuck about how deep you are or whatever, just, you know, I'm fart man, you know what I mean?
Well, as a musician, that's like, but that's your connection to the music though. You know, if you're watching a band and everybody's deeply connected to what they're playing in, it's going to be a different experience than someone who just gets together once every 30 days with their wedding country band and they get jammed through the old hits.
Yeah.
And in times they might have that, they might give themselves that little dopamine feeling of, oh, this is why I got into it.
Yeah.
And in the end, they probably feel empty. But they get enough out of that 30 days where they go, I don't need to do this every day.
Right. Well, my
maybe they've escaped.
Right. My thing is that, I mean, I do take it seriously and I'm putting myself out there, but I also realize the kind of the ridiculousness of all of that too, you know?
What do you mean by the ridiculousness?
Literally being that open and vulnerable. And like going to a place where they light it up and like, ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Gowdy is going to share his feelings with you. You know what I mean? There's the dichotomy of the whole thing is just kind of funny. And then also you'd love to get laid after a show. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like all of it's just weird.
I think it's amazing that
been weird.
Yeah, no, but it's not. It's just who you are. You're able to share your inner truths with people, but do it at a loud volume.
Yeah.
And there's something about delivering those ideas at a loud volume that makes it right.
Right.
And this is cuz you're like, yeah, when I write down my stuff and I see it, I'm looking around at my life and I'm like, this is what I see and blah blah blah, and I'm going to put this out and here's my music and it goes, and you see the reaction to it, you're like, yeah. That makes sense. You have something to tell people.
Yeah.
And you are. It's just doing it loud. There's nothing
wrong
with it.
And the thing to me is like, I am having some kind of experience spiritually and deep inside of myself and outside of myself. But at the same time, I'm a song and dance man, which is just kind of, you know.
Okay.
Like I'm out here and I'm expressing these incredibly important things, but I also spent 45 minutes trying to figure out what shirt to wear. You know what I mean? Like on the showbiz,
as a person who spends zero time on his look,
right?
I'm jealous. Well,
showbiz, and being an artist to me are different things, because like the world of commerce and the world of art, like they shouldn't mix, but they have to because we got to make a living. But
no,
to me, when
they
do mix, just the. Seriously, the dichotomy of the whole thing is just very funny to me.
Sure.
A lot.
Well, but
like when I sit back and look at it,
but even there are artists within business. Their medium is finance. Their medium is seeing the future and investing in and what they see is going to be, you know, revolutionary technology.
Right.
And then some people are just the cover band or the hack of business.
Right.
And that's ultimately there's the same truth in performance as the same truth in art. It sucks that they have. It's a necessary thing. Two entities live together, and it's the world of commerce and it's the world of art. Your choices go, well, I'm not the other, so I'm just gonna go be this 100%. And if you just focus on the one thing that you're driven to,
right,
then there'll be no problems with that. It's when you have to have your hand into the other one. You're like, oh, no, I'm still the finance guy, but I'm an artist for when I'm, you know what I mean? That's that disconnect, unless you figure out from your center how to be 100% honest at both. That probably takes a little bit of changing.
See, to
a little
me,
bit
that's
of work.
Like, to Who, me, that's
who's
like
teaching
a Louis,
that lesson?
That, to me, that's like a Louis C.K. as opposed to a Gene Simmons. Gene Simmons is like, to me, like Frito-Lay or some shit. Like, he will, if he can get everything from everyone, he will. You know what I mean?
But isn't that Gene's ability to just do the business in the way that he sees is right?
You're right.
You know, so, he had the foresight to trademark the bag of money.
Yeah.
Come on.
What a genius man.
That's just sit there and look around and go, wow, I gotta put a logo on. And then be so amazing at it.
Can I put a logo on?
I mean, it's a crass way to look at. But it's no different than just how people look at branding. You know what I mean? But he has the innate ability to do it perfectly.
Right.
I've owned it all. I still buy.
Yeah.
Because I love it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The thing is now that I have a different relationship with money. I have a different relationship with items. So I'm more interested to paying money for the experience of something that I feel strongly about, as opposed to, I don't need something to sit next to me with the logo on it to remind me of an experience that I currently live.
Right. You take a vacation.
Right.
Go to a nice dinner or whatever. Right?
I don't know.
Is that what you mean?
What do you mean?
I don't know. Okay. So wait a minute. I want to get back to this because did you read the Rolling Stone article about Kiss?
I did not.
There was a thing that I found.
You know what I did read? I read 12 comments under the story.
Okay.
Because it was people arguing, why did it take 40 years for them to get on the cover of Rolling Stone? And then the other argument was what was going on with the Hall of Fame. And I kind of said, I don't want to really read this article in Rolling Stone, but I will look at 12 random people that had the first 12 comments. They're the current block of what the thought is in the planet. And I scanned that and I go, okay, I get it.
Well, there was an interesting, there's the argument out there that, that Tommy Thayer and Eric Singer should not be wearing the costumes or whatever because Ace and Peter, whatever. Okay, so Gene says that he has like two tours or three tours left in him.
Yeah, I heard that quote.
And then that they think that Kiss should go on forever and other guys should dress in the Gene and Paul. I never knew that. I never realized that. And that totally kind of takes away the sting of the Ace and Peter thing, even though they did, you know.
So you're saying the fact that it's been stated that the band can continue without the original four makes it okay then?
They're looking at a greater vision. I didn't know if it was a personal thing because the way that you hear it from Ace and Peter,
right.
And I always side with them because I like them
of course.
More.
But they're also short-sighted. They're also short-sighted people living a short-sighted way. That
you're
said,
right.
I would rather have. You know, these next 4 hours. Okay, when homeboy's in a business meeting and someone's working on their vocals or they're working out and you're getting high.
Yeah.
But the idea of this is always going to continue. That's probably I can guarantee the disconnect is when the four of them sat down and the idea was put out. No, this is going to continue. The people who did not believe in that said, okay, well, I'm just going to be me. And then they were. And then the lineup kept changing because they had to bring people into the vision. Yeah. And as long as they shared the vision and they shared the lifestyle and they shared the growth that the band was growing into, then they stayed with the project, you know? Until it seemed like where they got that traction with the Unplugged record, and they felt the fan connection come in when the original guys came in, and they said, "We're going to give you guys another chance to be part of this forever," and it didn't pan out again, and so they went back to guys that they knew. You know, Singer had already proven himself.
Could handle it. Yeah.
Singer had already proved himself, and Thayer had already. You know, what was the cover band he was in? Love Gun.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it forever. He was the one who taught Ace the soul. I mean, that's amazing. You know, you're teaching Ace Frehley his own solos back to him. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
that's surreal in itself.
Some of me didn't even play, which is sad too. I always dismiss
that
stuff because it was so cool.
So here's the thing. So they're coming. They're going to be here in August. Okay, or July. I'm sorry, they're going to be here in July. Are you going to go?
No,
you're not going.
No,
John. Somebody knocks on your door and says, "Hey,
oh, I'll go.
I got okay."
Yeah.
So someone invites you.
Yeah.
Really?
It's them and Def Leppard.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'll go. But I talked about this the other day with my friend Gloria. We both love Def Leppard too. I don't know where you stand on that, but we're like
huge fans.
I want to hear. Like Pyromania, High and Dry, and On Through the Night.
And you will.
You will? And they're like, you're not going to hear, you're going to hear Bring It On the Heartbreak, but I bet you they don't play anything from On Through the Night, do they?
I don't know if they're the kind of band that runs that says this is tour's set list and we don't deviate, or if they're the kind of band that says we're just going to free flow, we're going to let the crowd dictate what the show's going to be. That's something that
are they still like that?
I don't know. I mean, you could Google it and tell you what the set list is, and if it doesn't change, then you know that they've decided as an entity these are the songs that we're going to play on this tour to be representative of the tour, instead of being the kind of band that says every night's going to be different. I guess that's just me looking at my own stand-up comedy. You're not going to come and see the greatest hits. You're going to come and see whatever's going on today is going to be forefront in my mind. And trust me, this is 100% what's going on in my being. And you're going to hear about it as long as we all understand how this energy flows.
Right.
You know? So maybe that's it. So maybe what you're looking for is a more improvised experience.
Yeah,
and so you're getting to a point where the majority of entertainment that's being put out for you is not an improvised experience, and you're finding yourself it doesn't look the same as it looked when you were a kid and you discovered it.
No,
is that part of being inside of the music? When
these guys go do these shows now, the stakes are so high, the ticket prices are so high, it's so hard to get people out that they're not going to play weird songs you don't, you know what I mean?
Right,
like the most off, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a Hey Jude kind of, like when you go see McCartney.
Sure.
Like, there's shit you're not going to hear. And he started kind of like bringing out some other stuff so that people would, you know, sort of reinvigorate going to see him.
Think about how many, take your favorite band in the world.
Yeah.
Okay. And then allow them no promotion, allow them no infrastructure to do a city other than they make one phone call and say, I want to play here on this day.
Right.
And the tickets go on sale now. And how many fans would they really draw if there was no blitz going out of advertising, of branding, of pre-announcements, of all of that stuff.
Right.
So then you have a corporate entity that understands all of that and brings in all the fans who would not be going because they're not viscerally connected to the band currently in that moment. But they go, oh, shit, those two bands are playing together. Yeah, I like rock.
Yeah.
I love Def Leppard. I love Kiss. I like rock.
Yeah.
Rock's cool.
It's a night of rock.
My buddy gave me a ticket. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Let's just go get drunk.
Yeah.
So then the band has to play to the back of the room, which is the diehard fans giving them something, giving them what they expect, and the people that are just viscerally on the outside that they want to bring in and become new fans, but then also make sure that the next time they come through, they're going to sell that many tickets.
Right.
So there you are in that balance of when you're creating that set list.
Yeah.
In the moment, you have the choice of, will we either create this today?
Yeah.
We created it 2 months ago, or we created it in the moment. That's their choice to make. And for me as a consumer, as long as I feel the same way, if I spend money to go and see something, then I want to feel that. I want to feel that rock. And you can tell, you've seen bands where they're like, no, you're not doing anything. I used to watch comedians. No, you are not doing anything right now.
Yeah.
You're reciting. You're acting.
Yeah.
I don't want to see an actor. I want to see people be people. I want to see somebody lose their mind.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. But that's that same bridge of stand-up comedy, hardcore music, and big arena metal.
Yeah.
You know? Look, I'm wearing a Maiden shirt right
now.
Okay? Yannick Gers joined the band in the early 90s, right? He was on the Fear of the Dark tour, I believe.
Right.
That was his first album, right? Yeah, that's right. Fear of the Dark. And he was in there. 10 years later, the old guy wants to get back in the band.
Yeah.
What, do you kick him out? No, he's got 10 years. Question is, when Iron Maiden goes to the Hall of Fame, does that dude get in? Fuck yeah, he does. Does every member in Kiss that has ever been in Kiss deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Yes, because we're putting Kiss in the Hall of Fame, and we're putting Kiss's history in the Hall of Fame. It's Kiss and everything that they've been for 40 years that we're putting in. And I think that's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So is it the Rock and Roll Hall that's only saying they're the original four get in? It's a disservice.
I have to be honest. I feel like they're probably the only people that are getting that kind of like.
Have you been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I've been there. Yeah.
Did you enjoy your experience?
I did.
Did it ring?
I like seeing that stuff. Even like when I go to like Hard Rock cafes, I walk around and like disturb people while they're eating. I'm like, I'm sorry, I just want to see Janis Joplin's jacket.
Yeah, no, it's no.
I don't even care for Janis Joplin.
I love seeing memorabilia in places like that too. But yeah. I don't. But that's my the seeing the memorabilia is not my connect. There are certain things where if literally I went to a Hard Rock cafe and you're like, this is the saw on Blackie Lawless's codpiece on the second Wasp record.
Yeah.
This is what he was wearing. I'll be like, oh, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is ridiculous. It's the way that it works is people. It's a corporate
It's a corporate identity of people who were never in rock bands deciding that they are the arbitrator of. Are there rockers?
I think there's rockers on the
who?
Thing. I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Why isn't Cheap Trick in there?
You know what I mean? Like Cheap Trick might not have sold.
Is Rush in?
Like Rush got in a couple years ago. Last year or something.
When I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the late 90s, I guess. Okay. And I went and I had my experience and I looked around and I said, okay, yeah, it was worth what I paid to go in. But I had that experience, so all of the conversation that happened over the years of why isn't Kiss in? How come Rush isn't in? Where's Cheap Trick? Where's this and this and this and this? That's a purposely driven conversation because we're running out of good rock bands, so they got to string the good rock bands out from a business perspective to keep people paying attention to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And so now we're just as people who have actually lived the life, we're having part of this corporate conversation that really we know we have our own Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and we frequent it every single day when we choose what we're going to listen to and we choose what we're going to go see.
Right.
And we choose what we're going to go experience.
Right.
So don't worry about this corporate entity's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Let's worry about your own.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the only conversation that needs to be having is that the bands, let the bands be the band, let the hall be the hall, and let the fans decide what their connection is.
Because I think that would be because I have no problem with Run DMC or LL Cool J, but I don't have a problem with them being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but Iron Maiden's never going to be able to be inducted into the Rap Hall of Fame.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, in some of those ways, like a Madonna, I understand that, but that was not... What is the rock and roll...
Aren't you going back to the original belief in what rock and roll was, which was an upsetting of the status quo that was going on in music?
You're right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a forced conglomeration of styles of music that you could not profit on because the business at that time was a racist business. So they said, how do we monetize this thing that we can't monetize? So we just bastardize it. And then we say, this is the new status quo. And people look around and go, yeah, that's it.
I guess
it.
You're
so
right. Once MTV sort of became the mainstream.
Sure.
So now you
had MTV that said, these are the artists that you're going to. This is the next round of cool. This is the next round of cool. This is the new upsetting of the cart. This is the Offspring. This is Limp Bizkit. This is you go on down the line.
Yeah.
This is the current new definition of what rock and roll is. And if you're still a participator in it, then come on and jump in. The water's great.
Yeah.
Until you don't.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. But you know, I don't really give a lot of. You know, I'm never going to be in the fucking Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Why not?
So I don't care. I don't know. I mean, maybe I will be, but I don't. I mean, I think back 25 years.
When you started playing music, the first instrument that you picked up, did you do that because you wanted to be in the Rock and Roll
Hall
of Fame?
Not at all.
Well, then that was never an idea.
No, it's not. And to me, it's kind of like there may be
people who literally when they picked up, like, they wouldn't even pick up that they said, I'm going to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
They picked up that thing, and that was the idea they had from the second they picked up that instrument.
Right.
And here they are, they've made it.
Yeah.
Or someone just kind of looked good, and a bunch of corporate entities got around it and turned them into the superstar that they wanted them to be, and they just went along for the ride, and they get to be rock and roll too.
Yeah.
It's weird, man.
It is weird. You know, I've never really...
Because I love you as a person.
Yeah.
If you were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'd go.
Oh, thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. If you were in, I would go too.
There you go.
All right. Maybe we'll be in.
We're already in.
Maybe that'll
We're
be
already in our own Hall of Fame.
Yeah. So the other thing too was before we get off of this rock and roll thing and Kiss.
All right.
I also found out that those guys were offered to play. They would play with Tommy and Eric, and then they would bring Ace and Peter.
Okay.
Up to do songs, but those guys didn't want it. They thought it should just be them.
Sure. Well, I mean, isn't the feeling...
To me, I thought that was kind of fair. I didn't think that was unfair. I mean, these guys are out schlepping all over the fucking world.
Right.
Representing that, so, you know.
As a fan,
it kind of stops for me at Dynasty.
Dynasty did.
That was the last one I bought. My uncle and I had this conversation last week. He bought Unmasked, and I remember going, I'm kind of...
Torpedo Girl, dude. Come on.
I moved on to a different style of music, I think, then.
Okay.
So,
but that's completely fine. The music, you were not connected. The band no longer reflected the image of what you saw in rock and roll that you were drawn to.
And this kind of thing was starting to get my attention.
Of course. And so in the same way that, you know, I owned Lick It Up, you know. I mean I owned it all. Yeah. I never got away.
Yeah.
But the thing is that when the majority of my time and energy and music was spent on thrash metal and was spent on hardcore bands and punk bands.
Yeah.
But as soon as Kiss came out with something new, I always bought it. And I always listened to it. And
as
I always
fan,
brought it into
you're
it.
A real fan.
As a fan, yeah. Of course. I loved Animal Eyes. I love Asylum. You know what I mean? I love Hot in the Shade.
Yeah.
I love it all. You know what I mean? Some of the stuff like when Vinnie Vincent came back, you know, when that was the record where they did Domino and Unholy.
I don't know. So.
Yeah, exactly. So it was you know, it was pre Unplugged,
right.
And it was pre the old dudes coming back in,
right?
Reinjecting the Kiss Army with old blood that they said, "Oh my God, yes, please, bring it back." Okay, and they brought it back, and then it ebbed and flowed, and the dudes didn't work out a second time. And if they already know that this is a band that we want to continue forever. And we already know that the guys we gave two chances to aren't going to carry the band forever. Then at this point in time, we have to say no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we have four members right now who believe in the forever vision of Kiss.
Right.
That's it.
I don't know.
I sound like such a nerd right now.
No, I mean,
I'm like the Kiss nerd. Like you want to know why I sit around and I drive for 8 hours in silence? Because I'm having the same conversation in my head. I'm just driving around.
But it's so nice to have friends where you can have a serious
today,
conversation about this. You know what I mean?
Of course it is. Of course it is. You know how many conversations I can have? You know how many comedians I can have this conversation with?
Yeah.
None. I don't
oh, really?
Know a single one that can have this deep level of nerdery. About
Kiss.
Heavy metal, about Maiden and Kiss. I mean, that's weird.
Posehn
probably could.
Yeah.
You know, I met him once.
Yeah.
You know, last year he came
Me too.
Through. Yeah. He was super nice.
Yeah. He was very nice.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
looks just like my friend Todd. He painted that for us, that guy that's kind of balding and looks like Posehn in that picture.
That's great.
Is there anyone out there now that you like listening to?
Music-wise?
Yeah. Who's new out there?
Oh, dude, Take Offense. From San Diego.
I've heard that.
They've been a band for 10 years now.
Okay.
And they tour internationally, and it's the same connection that I had to Agnostic Front and the Cro-Mags when they came out when I was a kid. I listen to these bands now, Take Offense, Power Trip from here in Texas.
Uh-huh.
Those two bands, when I watch them perform and I listen to their music, I'll be like, "Yo, this is real." I had that same like heart center connection that I had to my favorite old hardcore bands that I have to these hardcore bands. And then I do the same thing with, I like Municipal Waste is an amazing band. Violator from Brazil is an amazing band. Havoc from Denver, amazing bands. I mean, those are bands that are current.
Yeah.
You know, and so those are the bands that are current. And when I listen to it and I tune in, because most of my day now is spent, right, you know, being funny. Thinking funny thoughts.
Right.
So I I'm not in, I don't, I can't. And for some reason, my ADD works where if I can't really be creative when I'm listening to music, that's what I need to have the silence.
Yeah.
But when I need to take a break from doing that, then I put on music and I'll be 100% in that. What I take from listening to that music is going to 100% impact my quiet time later.
Yeah.
So, but I have to be cognizant of that. I can't share the experience. So like the bands now, those five bands that I listen to, they do it. And so I have fans and friends who send me stuff. Yo, you got to check out this band. You got to check out this. And sometimes they're right on the money. And sometimes I'm like, whoa, what do you listen to?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But I'm always open to new things.
Who did you go see last week? Carcass?
Carcass came in town and I haven't seen them since the 90s, I guess, you know? And it was such a long time.
Is that the same band that there was a tour, and it was a different Death, but there was a band called Death, and I remember going to Fitzgerald's in Houston and seeing Death, Pestilence, and Carcass.
Oh, that's
in like
amazing.
1991.
That makes sense. Right there in the what was it? I would call that the heyday of death metal.
Yeah.
You know, like we already had, you had the Clash of the Titans tour, which was Slayer and Megadeth, Anthrax, and Alice in Chains opened up, which is a weird, you know, it's kind of, do you realize what the Thrash tour.
Now
I have Monsters of Rock stuck in my head. I have all these huge Brandon tours that are stuck in my head from Day on the Green, and then there's Monsters of Rock, which was Metallica, and then Dokken, and then we had Clash of the Titans tour, which was Alice in Chains opening in San Francisco. Alice in Chains opened and Slayer's playing second. From the time the lights went off for Alice in Chains to go on, they chanted Slayer. They chanted Slayer every second through Alice in Chains. They got booed at the end, and they started chanting Slayer louder. The lights came on again. They played AC/DC. Kids were circle pitting to AC/DC before Slayer came on stage and blew the fucking lid off the place. That was Clash of the Titans. Then you have the rise. You have the rise of death metal. And they had the rise of the Clash. Basically, it was the new Titans on the Block tour. That was and so I went from seeing the Clash of the Titans with 14,000 people and seeing the new Titans on the Block with 600 and getting that same feeling. Holy shit. These five bands right now, this is amazing. This is Sacred Reich. This is Napalm Death. This is Sick of It All.
Yeah.
All on tour together. And it was like, that was the thing, because you're like,
whoa. I remember Napalm Death.
You remember that? They're still around. They're still a band. They're still on tour. Yeah. Napalm Death was on tour. Napalm Death was on tour with Hatebreed when Waddy had his heart attack on The Exploited.
Wow.
When Waddy from The Exploited had his heart attack, they were all on tour together. That's still a thing. Imagine how amazing that is.
How was it always able to incite such rabid fandom? There's like the stories of Metallica where the people had their backs to the thing, and
was the Exodus Metallica thing when they what was it Metallica moving up from L.A. to San Francisco being accepted,
right?
I don't really know.
Going back to L.A. or something,
but that was just at a time when like. Dude, this is LA thrash, bro. That's not Bay Area thrash. That's not the stuff in New York. And there are always those people who kind of kept the scenes divided, and then people who saw the bigger picture would do. We're all doing the same thing,
right? But there is. I want to get to this. There's not that in other styles of music like there is, there can be with certain artists.
Okay,
but with metal in general, how long have you been listening to Iron Maiden?
81.
You're wearing their fucking shirt 33 years later.
Sure.
You never stopped being a fan. There's those guys on that metal show. There's not like...
Oh, yeah.
There's not like...
Oh, Don and Jim?
Don, Jim, and Eddie.
And Eddie.
That goes on there, and everyone in the audience, and everyone that's made that show keep going and being successful. They're people that have not stopped. They're still wearing the colors of their band. They've got jean jacket with the patch of the band, and that's the band.
I wear a battle vest. I've performed stand-up comedy wearing my vest. You know? Because it's like, you're like, this is, You spend 45 minutes picking out a shirt to wear.
Yeah.
I've almost spent 45 years being the psychopath thinking I can wear whatever I want. It's a main shirt, it's a vest.
Yeah.
If it's just a golf shirt and slacks, you still know that I'm a metal dude playing golf.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
there's a deep fandom there. That's,
of course,
that's beyond, I think, most kind of rock music.
I mean, but it's all about, I guess, what rock meant to you when you first discovered it. What was going on in your life when you discovered it?
And it really spoke to disenchanted people. So it spoke freedom.
Right.
Acceptance.
Well, look at, of, yes.
You it, found your group. You yes. were no longer
us against
an outcast.
Them. Yeah. Us against them, yeah. You know. And it's, you know, and is that a still a viable entity we can be in this world? Sure. But you now, from when I got into it, sure, it was the we're rocking. If you're not, you suck.
Yeah.
And now it's looking back from it from a perfect, like of looking down on the perspective going, oh, okay. Well, in that idea is people who are 100% invested till the death of doing it and people who are just casual fans.
Right.
It's not about the collective experience, because what's happening, even the people who are just casually using it and the people who are 100% invested of it, it all needs to be, because it's all, I think what happens is in our spirit, and like if you were to, I'm holding up like, I'm really like an invisible orb, you know, yeah, metal, yeah, like metal, yeah, singers have, yeah, the invisible orb. So I have my 360 degree perfect sphere of somebody's energy. And sometimes as anxiety comes into your being, or you have an illness or something, you get deficits in your spirit. And sometimes you need something to fill that deficit. And sometimes it's food, sometimes it's drugs, and sometimes it's metal.
Yeah.
But then I think that what happened in a time when people discovered music is there was something going on that opened up a huge opportunity for metal to come in there and work out the way things did fix something.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so it still works, I guess. That's the thing, where if I'm the most stressed out, you know, if I take a time where business is going weird, or the, you know, the creative thing, it's a blockage, I can sit down and listen to an old metal record. I can pick up Killers, you know. Yeah. I go, oh shit, I'll put on Seventh Son of a Seventh Son and jam out to that, you know.
Yeah.
And just sit back and just kind of close your eyes and meditate and just listen to the music, and you can able to reset. Maybe like a 45-minute Iron Maiden record to me is the same you 45 minutes quitting music and then getting back into the pool.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. So you have 4 podcasts, right?
Currently, yeah.
Under the 4256 podcast.
Yeah, the 4256
productions. 4256
productions,
yes. Sorry. 4256. What is that?
It's the same number, just, yeah, said a different way.
But what does it mean? What does it mean to you?
4256 represents 4256 represents the amount of hits that Pete Rose had in his career.
Okay.
And I look at that as a dude who absolutely embodied.
Today's opening day.
Yesterday, yeah, yeah, I went to a local bar here with about 20 other Red Sox fans and watched us lose 2-1 to the Orioles. That was something that I did opening day.
Astros are today. That's my
you
team.
Should watch if you're, yeah, gonna, if you're a fan. You should, you know. Go. And that's the, yeah, thing. It's like and it's like watching opening day and just taking that 3-4 hours to kind of sit around other Red Sox fan and understand, like, though, these are people who really love. These are people who really love the team and love the game.
Shit, yeah.
You know, and everyone got together and it was a real good, solid sense of community, you know, and it was a nice break. I definitely came away from that game different than I went into it, even though we lost.
Yeah.
Even though we lost, just the experience of being around those folks was really, really awesome.
I like that about baseball. I like it's a calm, it's a communal thing.
Sure.
And it's like golf, it doesn't lie. You know what I mean?
Okay, sure. Yeah, but I look at golf in a different way, you know. I mean, when I play golf, I don't keep score. The only score I keep is when I birdie or par something.
Okay,
and that's it. I always respect the other game that people are playing.
Yeah.
So if I know that I'm playing with two retired dudes in their 70s who just ate shit for a living to eke out a retirement, and now they get to play golf once a week. this is their time to go out and experience their retirement. I can't show up like the guy who fucking barely worked ever in his life who gets to play on the same course at the same time. Right. I'm not going to be a dick about it. Right. But at the same time, I'm going to absolutely have fun in my golf game in a way that they might look at it and go, well, that's just a different way to approach things.
Yeah.
You know, and be that example. Yeah. You know, we were sitting in a golf cart. I was sitting in a golf cart waiting to tee off. And this other group, these like four, like two carts in a row, like approached. They were just full of old dudes. And the one guy goes, man, that's a crazy beard. And then they drove by. And then the next guy goes, I got scissors for that beard if you want to clean up. I looked at the dude. I said, I have this so I don't have to work so I can play golf now and wait till you're doing it now. Yeah. And the look on his face that I said that, he was bummed. Just bummed that he just drove by me going, I guess you can have a beard. It's all right.
Yeah, I can beat you to it.
But anyway, going back to 4256, it's an homage to Pete Rose and the way he played the game. Yep. The fact that he was the greatest hitter that we've ever had. He had the most, he was Charlie Hustle. Think about that. In a game that's based on hustle, he's the only dude ever to have hustle in his nickname because he embodied it. He's not in the Hall of Fame either. Now that's a Hall of Fame that matters even to me. Yeah. I've never gone. I will one day. I've never been to Cooperstown.
Never gone either.
So, and I think that's the thing is when I go to Cooperstown, it's the first time I go to Cooperstown is because Pete's going in.
You think he's not back in?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Didn't what he was in and then they stripped him of his thing? No, he just never.
Never been allowed in. Oh. And so I look at that. I look at that and I say, well, you know what? How is that the way he approached baseball, right?
Right.
Is the way I'm going to approach stand up. But you just can't gamble on stand up.
Right. It'd be interesting if you could. I don't know how that would work. Can you explain?
Trust me, if there was a way to gamble on fucking stand-up comedy, Vegas would have a place you could go and do that.
Oh, yeah. That would be amazing.
Of course.
You're going to Vegas soon.
Yeah, going to Vegas in May.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Excited about
it's going to be interesting.
Are you doing a hotel casino?
I don't know. I'm doing like I'm doing like a couple rock clubs.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I'm going to have all the information on my site. That's another thing. Why I have to be my own web guy? I'm the worst web guy known to me. I'm the worst blog. I'm like, if I take the time to sit down and do it, it'll be good. And then I'm like, well, how come I'm not spending 100% of the time on my website? Well, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to be a comedian. You got to have podcasts.
It's like an octopus, dude. Yeah. So it's like one of my tentacles is in the web updating thing. Yeah. And it's just slow.
Yeah.
You know? So I figured the 4256, it started when I was 42 years old. It's going to end when I'm 56. I'm going to put 14 years of hustle into the next thing and then I'm out.
That's it.
I already have a plan.
Well, can you briefly describe each podcast as I name them?
Sure.
Disrupt the Illusion.
Disrupt the Illusion is a podcast that started with myself and Paul E. Hendricks, who's an author here in town. He actually moved to Austin from Hawaii. He's an Amazon best-selling author. Wake Up, the Enlightenment of a Misfit and Outlaw, available on Uncovery Press. How's that for a plug?
It's really good.
Ray Combs Jr.,
right,
who is a comic from New York who also moved here. He was a comic that I started with. The first time that I did an open mic at the La Jolla Comedy Store, he was on the show later, and he was the first person that I ever saw do stand-up comedy that crushed who was not professional.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
why do I know his name?
His dad is the host of Family Feud. He was the second host of Family Feud after Richard Dawson.
Okay.
So, you know, that's why the name is synonymous.
Right.
Ray is probably my favorite comedian.
Wow.
Ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does he perform here at stuff?
Not really. No? I mean, you might catch him at an open mic.
Okay.
If he
working
decides.
Working on some stuff.
It's not that. Oh. It's not a word. You know, to him, it's working stuff out, but he approaches stand-up comedy in such a different way, you know?
Yeah.
And so he'll just show up to an open mic, and you don't know, and he's one of those things, too. He's a loaded weapon, dude. Those are my favorite.
You know what's going to happen.
Those are my favorite comedians to watch is people who you have no idea what's coming.
Right.
And you're just like, oh, I'm going to watch this because this might be the one.
Yeah.
Think about that. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This might be the greatest thing in the history of ever.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of bands I want to see. That's the kind of comedy that I want to see. That's the kind of experience that I want to have.
Yeah.
Because I always think that's that representative in the moment energy that if people are just absolutely allowing themselves to be, not trying to be, but it's allowing themselves to be, stripping away all the bullshit that you surround yourself with to just show up and just be you.
Yeah.
And then that's that visceral experience.
That's what I'm looking for in sex too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, so where do you shop for that?
I don't know. I think I have to get on Tinder or something.
Is there an MTV Movie Awards for sex?
No, I don't think so. Okay. After the,
I'm not letting you get out of this conversation. You dropped. You're some kind of sexual deviant. Of course, now I understand why you're such a fan of the Police, because you're into this 16-hour tantric sex weirdness. Johnny Gowdy, I found that you're really deep root here to rock and roll.
Dude, I'm going through a dry spell. I'm in my seventh week.
Come on.
I almost had sex during South by Southwest. There was a girl. She was here. We were naked, and my friend that was staying with me came home. She was here from New York, and then all of her stuff was in my room, so there had to be, it was a break-in vibe that was too much of one. Wait. And then I never got back on it again. Then why wouldn't you
go someplace else instead of your own place if you knew that your own place had this thing lying in wait that was ultimately salt your game?
I'll be honest, I was at a show and then I had to go do something at the awards,
right?
And I was like, hey, I'm leaving, and she was like, hey, I don't want to go with the people I'm with, can I go with you? But yeah, I'm gonna have to just kind of be with you till tomorrow. And I was like, okay, but I did not know. I thought it was like, can I just stay at your place? She's sure. A musician, very cool. I didn't think that
Why
was
would
actually
it matter?
Going
yeah.
on.
You would only let someone stay in your apartment that they understood that, yo, you know that I might be getting laid, right? That should be just an understood thing.
Right.
Okay.
So we are leaving the thing, and then we started making out, and then I was like, oh, it's a different, what am I going to text my friend Nicole at 12:30 at night, like find somewhere else to stay?
Right.
She's from New York.
Sure, that's not a fair thing. So why not just get a hotel?
During South by Southwest.
How bad do you need this dry spell to end? Is it worth a $600 hotel room?
Now it
at
is.
South by?
Now
looking back, all right, looking back on now it, would it you is. Have spent the money?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well then there you go. There lies in the reason. The reason that you're in a 7-week dry spell is because you're lazy, cheap. You're casting your own aspersions on what's going on in yourself right now. Maybe you're approaching today's sex from your yesteryear's approach. And you need to change up your approach.
Yeah.
Because you're not the same person. You're not the same person now that you were.
You're right.
So now looking back on your experience, you're like, dude, I would have dropped the six hundo in a second. We'd be telling a totally different story. You'd be on my podcast talking about crazy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a great conversation to have on Disrupt the Illusion, to really go, well, okay, what's really going on with this one thing that you're working on? And then get yourself to a point where you're going, oh, I need to approach this in a different way.
Yeah, I do need to approach it in a different way. You're totally right.
And that's in your discovery of those changes that you need to make in your approach.
Right.
Ultimately, the reason it didn't work out is because you didn't want it to work out. That's the illusion of all of this thing is that your life experience is 100% of your doing. And if once you're done with it, you look at it and you don't like it, that's your choice. You can negatively look on what you've created, or you can positively look on you've created,
right,
and how you approach that is going to change the outcome of it. But it's all about the energy that you put into anything that you do. So that's what Disrupt the Illusion is about.
Okay.
So that being said, Paul's off doing his own thing right now, working on his book. Ray's got a job, and I've got three other podcasts and a tour schedule. And so it's like right now, I don't want to say that we're on a podcast hiatus, but I don't know. I don't know, unless I figure out how to have these deeper conversations, which I don't know. You have this kind of podcast where I can come on here and have this conversation.
Yeah.
My Disrupt the Illusion is this. It's almost the same open conversation.
Right.
It's just in a different free flowing form.
Right.
But I want people to have a conversation and then have connections happen in their mind and going, oh, well, that's an opportunity. That's an opportunity. That's an opportunity to listen to somebody else's experience and go and think about their own experience and go, oh shit, that's how easy that is.
Right.
It's one. You know, you have a mixing board here, and you have all your gear around. And if you change one preset, if you change one dial, if you fade up one or you fade something down, it changes what the overall mix is.
Yeah.
Our experience here in life is nothing but a series of yes and no switches and how you approach things.
Yeah.
And if you just took it and you switched everything to yes,
and just let it, and that's your default, then that's what this is supposed to be anyways. That's pure acceptance. That's faith.
Go with the flow. Ride the wave.
You are the wave.
Yeah.
You are the wave.
So
you are the flow. You are the wave. You're the molecules. Your stillness and your storm.
Yeah.
All at the same time.
Wow. It just blew my mind.
I don't know about that. What if we smoke weed? How crazy would this be?
So I listened to episode 12 of Carpe Diem today.
Awesome. Thank you.
There's a lot of different stuff that goes on in that show. There's some live stuff of you.
Yes.
Do you record all your shows?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Yeah. That's one of the, I would say something in the moment that would get a reaction, and then I would try to revisit the same idea, and the reaction wouldn't be the same. So I said, I want to listen to this because I want to catalog what's going on in real time.
Right.
And say, well, that's how you expressed this idea to this audience. Did it ring true or not?
Right.
And then what was going on when you were on stage that either made it work or didn't make it work? Because it's not the audience, it's me.
Right.
Absolutely. And so, but at the same time, I want, you know, I have this approach, my approach to everything is kind of an Evel Knievel approach to life, where you want to see this dude make it over the 18 buses.
Yeah.
Or you want to see him wreck. Either way,
either way, it's going to be great.
Dude's wearing a cape. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, that's like Kiss and Dynasty. They were wearing capes.
Yeah.
Yes. Fuck yeah, you're wearing a cape. You've earned it.
Yeah.
You are the Supermans of rock.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't you wear a cape? You know? And I look at the same thing and I go, well, tonight's set, whether if it's in front of 5 or 500, I'm going to jump over some buses here. I'm going over Snake River Canyon.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm doing this because I want to see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to capture all the wrecks.
Yeah.
So that's why I record.
I wish I still had it. In the late 90s, I found this Evel Knievel CD at Waterloo. It had a bunch of different shit.
It had him speaking
to like a bunch of third graders about writing. And he's like, hey, does anyone have mini bikes? I swear to God.
I have to find this.
You got to find it.
Evel Knievel talking to third graders?
Yeah. It's a thing. He's doing things
Ever break a fibula? No. Let me tell you about real pain in my marriage.
Oh, he's totally like that. But he also, my band afterwards, the band Gowdy, we took the first thing on it, which was a poem that he was reciting that he had written about the greatness of himself.
Shut up.
And that's what we went on stage to. It was there's like music in the background, and it's like him going like, would anyone be so scared? I would never be scared of anything. I'm Evel Knievel. Then we'd start playing. It was so over the top.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I always love bands that you knew. You knew when they were coming on because they had that musical interlude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I love that shit.
Metallica. I don't know what Metallica's one that they play. It's like a real anthemic, like kind of an awe, and like an orchestral bring up. That's how they come in. You know, Kiss always plays. You know, Kiss always plays the Who.
Yeah.
Before they go on.
Yeah.
You know, like when Maiden was on tour and they had Churchill's speech as the beginning.
Yeah.
Even if they did it now, the hair on my neck would stand up.
Yeah.
That's cool when you hear like. You know, Anthrax coming up to remember when the Blues Brothers go and they take the stage after they've barked in all those people?
Yeah.
Right? And they open up and they die in the beginning.
Yeah.
The Anthrax would open up to that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And then just crush. So take it to that same huge bring up point that just fails.
Yeah.
It's like, womp, womp. And then they rock from there. Yeah. I always love that.
I love Anthrax.
Oh,
that's
hands
a great band.
Oh, it's so amazing. That was my favorite of the big four.
Yeah.
And I always said, you said, give me Metallica, Slayer, Anthrax. We kick out Megadeth. Sorry. You had your chance.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we bring in Testament. We have Testament be the fourth of the big four.
I know this sounds weird, but I don't think I've ever heard Testament.
Testament is I grew up.
I've seen their shirts.
Of course, I think Testament's the most. I think I have like 3 Testament patches on my vest.
I gotta listen to it.
It's as like from when the Legacy came out in the '80s. this is the cool part. I grew up in Pleasanton, California, which is in the East Bay.
Yeah.
So I got to be an 80s thrash kid in the explosion of Bay Area thrash.
Yeah.
To experience it. It was like incredible. And then not only that, to be like a kid in the suburbs, and then one of your favorite bands grew up in the town next to where you grew up at. And yeah. I would see Chuck Billy at the mall. You know, and he's a singer of Testament.
Awesome.
Yeah. And you're like, oh my dude, that's a singer of Testament. Yeah. You could also go see them. You could go see them at a club.
Yeah.
You could go see them. You know what I mean? And that was the one thing. It's like now that band, even today, hands down one of my top bands.
Yeah.
And they've been through a lot of member changes. They've been a lot of musical direction changes, and they still bring it. Those dudes crush.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What about Metallica? Do you like that?
I like Metallica up through, I would say I like Garage Days, the EP.
Oh yeah.
And I liked the song Blackened, and I liked the song Dyer's Eve off of And Justice.
Uh-huh.
And then that's where it ends.
That's where it ends.
And so the connection that I had to the style of music that they played, when they changed the way they approached their music, yeah, and it didn't ring true for me anymore.
Yeah.
I said, well, I'm just not a consumer of the new stuff.
Right.
But you give me those first, you know, 4.5 records. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Undeniable. Undeniable. Now, and even now when they go out and they tour and they play Ride the Lightning in its entirety.
Yeah.
Dude, that's 100%, man.
Yeah.
You know, I got to be, I was standing on stage at the first Orion Fest in Atlantic City.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Craig Gass got me up on, the comedian, the guy who,
Craig Gass
works for Kiss.
Yeah,
he's hysterical. And so he got me up on that, and we were able to watch the first couple songs, and they were bangers.
Yeah.
And then they got into that show, they were playing the Black Album in its entirety, and that was the first album that I really just detached from. And so they opened up super strong and they closed super strong, but they played the Black Album, and I was just like, I didn't connect with the music,
yeah,
but I still saw them as they were really, you know, bringing it.
Yeah.
But it was just a different
experience.
They
really do bring it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I know I've told you this before, but I was signed to Lars's label. We signed our deal at a Metallica show.
That's amazing.
Backstage. Yeah, it was weird. We were watching on the side. You know, he was really, there's like a weird playful element to his sort of thing, and he likes to sort of have grandiose moments. Like,
okay,
we were backstage after the show, and we knew that the deal was being negotiated, and our lawyer had called while we were on our way to the show, and we went to the show, hung out, met all the dudes, and then he came in, and he was like, we were all sitting on coolers, and he was like, look, we've come to the end of negotiating this contract, you guys. And he didn't seem good about it. He was like,
how freaked out were you sitting there?
Totally. I was like, well, what the fuck did I just fucking sit through your show for, asshole? Why didn't you tell me when I got here?
Were you the most freaked out of everybody in your band?
No, everybody's face just fell. Everyone was like, what? And he goes, so you guys can...
And he watched all your faces fall?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, he set you up.
He said, you guys...
Now that's a headliner.
Yeah, totally. Totally. He was like, you guys can go ahead and... I hope you had a good time at the show. You guys can go ahead. You guys can go ahead and take off back to Austin. And then he leans over and he pulls out this FedEx box and he goes, or you can sign these record deals. And he just dumped them out on the floor. And we fucking freaked out and celebrated. We were sitting on coolers filled with ice and champagne.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that gives me the willies.
Yeah, then we went to some weird Metallica after party, and none of them would talk to us. Lars really had to leave, and so he was like, go party with the guys, dude.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jason talked to us.
Right.
He was still in the band.
Okay.
He was very, very nice.
I think
he liked our band.
Sure. And I think that, you know, coming from, what was he? Was he in Sacred Reich? No.
No, he was
in Flotsam and Jetsam.
Flotsam and Jetsam, yeah.
Yeah, so coming up from Flotsam and Jetsam and understanding like what that van tour grind life experience is, to then experience, you know, to then, what year is this?
I remember there was one thing that we were like, Lars, we're either going to rent vehicles or buy a van. And we didn't have a manager at the time. So
okay.
I would like call him. I mean, like, this is the most experienced guy I know.
Yeah.
And hey, what would you do? And I remember when I asked him about buying or renting a van, he goes, dude, all I can my decisions are like, should I buy a fucking G4 or should I take a fucking G5? I don't care if you buy or rent a fucking van. I was just like, okay.
That's awesome.
So their life was so different.
Well, of course, but he still had the presence of mind as the newest member of Metallica and the guy most connected to thrash and coming from the underground, that he understood where you guys were in that sense.
Yeah.
So that's why it was cool that he allowed you into that hangout.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I respected his reasons for leaving.
Yeah.
You know, which I think was he wanted to put out like a thousand copies of an EP he had recorded. And they were like, is this bad for the band?
You know, I have a bit of an insight to that. I remember he had done something. He had put out an album. He actually had put out an album.
Okay.
With somebody on a side project. And I said, I was like walking around with Lars. And I said, oh, hey, did you hear that? Or what did you think of this new thing that Jason did? I listened to it the other day. It's, you know, it's really good. He goes, I didn't listen to it. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Why didn't you listen to it? Cause like my dude made a fucking album. I'd listen to it.
Sure. Of course.
He's like, I didn't listen to it because I'd have to formulate an opinion and someone would ask me in the press and I'd have to tell him it sucks if I thought it did. And I was like, how do you, like, that's the most dysfunctional group. I was like, Jesus Christ, like, what a horrible.
Or Lars absolutely knows, he absolutely knows that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because he's just going to be him.
Exactly.
And so he's going to limit his stimulus.
Yeah.
Because he knows that the only thing that can come from bringing that in is a negative opinion.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and then to have that foresight is practically pretty, I don't know, it's pretty solid.
Yeah.
You know? So as the band changed and Newstead saw himself changing in his own person, he goes, I don't need this control above me. I didn't get into this for this.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, but then to have Trujillo come in, now that's a dude. Dude, Robert Trujillo is like hands down one of the best bassists ever.
And I bet that his enthusiasm injected into that group probably.
From Suicidal Tendencies to Metallica?
Yeah.
Hell yes.
Just totally.
Absolutely.
Excitement. Like totally probably lifted their spirits too.
Yeah, of course. Because now think about the tour. Let's go back to Kiss. Think about how God of Thunder sounded when Peter Criss was playing a fully triggered kit. And his wrists, when his carpal tunnel was bothering him,
right.
and he's probably on 95 Advils to be able to make it through the show as he's not taking care of himself and he can't continue to play,
right.
and then you know, God of Thunder turns into a dirge,
yeah,
dun 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 dun. You listen to the demo of that song. You've listened to the demo of the song that starts with guitar that Paul wrote.
Yeah,
it's fast.
Where do you hear that?
It's online. I think it came was it was in one of their box sets.
I need to get some box sets.
And so now you have Singer in the band. That song returns to the anthemic song that it is, not the slowed down dirge that it had to become.
Yeah.
So now think about the audience, the true fans reacting to the way that song is being played.
Yeah.
Then they're like having that visceral response to. I can guarantee they started to see the audience wane as the music degraded with the other members. And they said, the music, we're losing our musical edge here. We're still a band, even though we're merchandise up the ass and we're still a spectacle. But the music
still gotta be good.
You still gotta rock.
Bring it.
You still gotta rock, dude. Yeah. And so they brought in Thayer and they brought in Singer. And then
I don't feel so bad about it now.
Good.
I did before, and I think it's just because I just feel for Ace all the time. I just want him to be happy.
And Ace is your favorite member?
By far. Okay. Always. From the second I saw Kiss Alive.
Yeah. And Paul is always my favorite.
Yeah.
You know. And so it's that's because you were gonna be a guitarist and I was gonna be a frontman.
Yeah.
You know? Probably what it came down to. Even when I was a kid, I guess I knew I was going to be doing this. It took a long weird road to figure out that this is where it was all ending up. You know, how do you conduct an audience?
Yeah.
How you doing, people? Yeah.
I was talking to someone backstage. I always wonder who that person was. Talking to some people backstage.
I need a way to start this line. So I created somebody.
hey, Paul, you know that there's a lot of people out there that are really into vodka and orange juice. Really?
Yes. San Francisco. When we were on tour, when we were starting out, we used to go down to this leather store, and there was a woman there who helped me get into her skins.
He's getting a laugh on that? Fuck yeah, he is. Fuck yeah, he is. Paul Stanley could fucking tell the dumbest joke in the world, and I'd fucking still laugh.
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
I love Kiss.
That's the Kiss. That's the, okay, let me put out my feelings.
Yeah.
And be a song and dance man in the same thing.
See?
There it is.
There it is. Come full circle.
We always come full circle.
Hey, with this new podcast that I'm doing about the movies, when we do Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park,
oh, I can't
on
wait.
Our list of people, your name is on it, so you'll be the guest for that.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait either. Our one of the co-hosts, Einar, had to have his kidney removed a few weeks ago, so he has to recover, and then we can get to work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
That is nuts.
I'm on my latest heart thing. Yes,
blew my mind.
I'm fascinated. I'm glad you brought this up because I'm fascinated with if you lose a part of you, that's your inner workings.
What was the story? The guy killed himself in the same way, and then also married the dude's
widow? That was one of the stories that we covered in Carpath 12, I believe.
Yeah,
I don't know. Me and my computer. You know what? All right, I'm gonna tell you. I'm gonna let you in. It was a little secret. This is how I record. I can't believe I'm telling you this. As I record by myself. It's an empty apartment. It's just me and a microphone. And sitting propped up against my speaker next to my laptop is a 1975 or 76 actual mint condition Mego Paul Stanley action figure, the 12-inch action figure.
Yeah.
Remember that? We had it when we were kids?
Dude, I had
them,
yeah.
Out of the box, sitting there just looking. And when I do Carpath Diem, he's my co-host.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
And so I never feel like I'm playing to just the empty room.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm actually playing. I'm playing to the idea of like, what if you had to have? What if you had to make Paul Stanley laugh? Think about that. Oh. The guy that makes you laugh every time he talks.
Here's something I'll tell you: Lars Ulrich and I had completely different senses of humor. And when I would say fucking legitimately hysterically funny things, he would go, "Yeah, so." And then he would say things that I thought were terribly stupid. And then he would just laugh. And it was like, there was such an odd thing to have two guys that didn't. Or one day he said to me, like, he didn't laugh at what I said. He was like, you're very funny. And I was like, no, I'm not. You never fucking laugh at anything I say.
That's the ultimate compliment.
Yeah, I guess
a dude in a serious moment telling you you're funny. Yeah, you're funny. Obviously, you're a funny dude. But don't you find, like, in rock and roll and all the bands that you've been in, I've always gravitated to the people in entertainment who were funny, even dudes who are in bands.
The best bands I've ever been in have been the band has, like, a collective sense of humor.
Oh, absolutely.
And, like, you can just, someone will say something, and you have so many inside things that everybody just laughs and no one knows what they're laughing at. That's been my favorite experiences with bands.
Of course. So that's the ultimate inside baseball of being in a band.
Love it.
You know?
Yeah.
My fascination with losing a part of your insides,
right,
how that changes you.
Yeah.
When I read this article, and I really do limit what I announced on this podcast, this is the way I approach the news. You ready for this?
Right.
I can read every single headline on every aggregator. If I go to CNN.com, I go to FoxNews.com, I go to Drudge, I'm on Reddit.
Right.
If there's a news story, I allow myself to read all. I can read the title of the article, and I can read the comments.
Okay.
But I only allow myself 7 articles a week. That's
okay.
It.
Okay.
And the 7 articles
that I end up looking at are
the one thing was, yeah, you got me. You got me with the title. I'm in. Whatever we're learning about. And when I saw the title of the story was that a guy who had a heart transplant,
right,
killed himself in the exact same way as the guy where he got the heart from. I'm like, get the fuck out. That's like, that's science. That's a ghost story. That's how does, what does science really know about what consciousness is? And is the heart center the true seat of our soul? Our brain is the thing that we use to judge our experience. It allows us to see what's going on. It allows us to take in all of our stimulus, which then gets filtered in through the heart center. So you have two ways to look at this. Your heart center drives your experience, yeah. and then your brain is secondary to it.
Yeah.
Or your brain drives the experience and has to filter everything, and your heart plays second fiddle. I think that's your choice to make and how you approach life. And that was the one thing that I kind of had to learn as I moved from the life of banking to the life of doing comedy, is that I had to understand that my heart connection to everything that I truly love in this world is what really matters. What I think about it is second. And most of that, it's an illusion anyways.
Right.
You know, all of my formulated opinions on whatever's going on.
Right.
So when I read a story like this, it goes back, because now here comes the conspiracy mind is in there going, yeah, Dick Cheney, he had a heart transplant too. What, did he get a pig valve put in or a pacemaker or something? Or it was an article that I had read a long time ago that said there were people around Dick Cheney when he was alive that said when he came out of that first heart surgery where part of his inner workings.
Still alive?
Yeah, you know, he's still alive. Okay. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
But when he was a certain kind of person who looked at social justice and he looked at business and he looked at life and he looked at something in a certain worldview before he went into this surgery. And when he came out of it, the people said that he was not the same person when he came out of it, because part of his anatomy had changed. Now, is there a real connection about that? That if you take in somebody's heart, what is it about living through somebody's heart? Where not only did this dude take in the heart of this guy who killed himself, but then fell in love with the guy's widow?
Yeah.
And then ended up killing himself in the same way. What was ingested? Is your very approach to life this heart center? Is this really it? We spend our whole life, all of our systems, everything that's been built up to sell us things and create ideas and to keep people divided and scared and running around and going from whatever to whatever because they're afraid of what's going on. That's what's being sold to you. You can do that if you live through your head first, or you can stop and say, no, I have to live really what's true to me.
Right.
And it comes from that heart center. And then you let that lead and see where that takes you.
Yeah.
What if we smoke weed before we do this?
John Toll, you can find out everything about that you need to find out about 4256 podcasts, Dispute the Illusion, After the Illusion, Cart Path DM, Take It Under Advisement, his comedy tours, your merchandise, your album that I'm drawing a blank on the name of, but I do listen to it.
Didn't Rain
I
send and you laughs. A thing?
Rain and Laughs. I listened to it after the last time we were on the Charlie Hodge show together.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. And in fact, Rain and Laughs, yeah. Rain and Laughs, I'm on a label called Stand Up Records.
Yes.
And they, in fact, today, April 1st, they launched their first iTunes web store.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
So if you want to go ahead and check out,
that's where I bought it on iTunes.
Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the, I would say if you want to go, you can, of course you can see a live date and come out and see me and buy one that way. I still have physical.
Yeah.
Or now how industry is that? Yeah. I still have physical.
Still physical.
Or they want to buy it online cause everything goes to your handset and your computer to when you buy it and that's easier for you. Then go to the Stand Up Records iTunes web store and get that way.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Thank you for having me on.
You're the only person who's I've ever deleted when we did it last year, but I'm glad that we got to redo it. I'm glad we took time, and I'm glad we just had a great conversation.
I always have
a great time hanging out with you. Everyone, check out John Toll. He's one of my very favorite comedians and a great, great, great dude. JohnToll.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Toll. Get out there to JohnToll.com, man. Buy. It's got a great record. And check out those podcasts, man. Cart Path DM, that's the newest one. It's on Tasty Podcast. I'm going to have a sister show to him called Does Anybody Remember Laughter? It's not going to be out for a while, another month or so at least. So anyway, get out there. Check out John Toll. He's one of my favorite comics. Seriously, he's very, very funny, super pro, super cool, and fucking a great hang and a great person to talk to. I will have him back from time to time, and we will have a long conversation like we did there, because you know what? I get a lot out of it. I really do. I get a lot out of hanging out with that guy. I just love him. All right, everyone, remember, comedy is not pretty, okay? And but John Toll is, in a weird way. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can like us on Facebook. And if you want to know what I'm doing in 140 characters or less, I'm on Twitter at Johnny Gowdy. I'm also at Johnny Gowdy on Instagram if you do not know how to read and only understand pictures. Okie doke. How about a little bit more Kiss in honor of John Toll and his tattoo? So glad I did that. I can't believe I erased a fucking episode. That was a paranoia of mine, and I did it to like the meanest, biggest looking guy you can imagine, but is the sweetest guy in the world. John Toll. How about some more Kiss? You guys, enjoy whatever you're enjoying right now. Let's get down.